Hello, and welcome to another episode of Little Fish. This is the bonus Monday episode where we put down our favorite facts from the last 7 days, and we go through the facts that you have sent us via podcast@qi.com. Thank you, everyone who has done so. We've had an amazing collection of facts sent in this week. Let's get to it. Who wants to get going?
I've got one.
Andy.
This one. Bring that energy, Andy. Bring that energy.
This is from Stephen Turner. And it's a very good email. It combines a good fact and then a bit of abuse and then a bit of praise.
Right.
It's okay. Got a bit of everything.
Do you want to miss out the middle bit?
No, I think you need it. It's abuse of me, though, so don't worry. So it's all
maybe miss the fact. I'm happy with just pure abuse.
Okay. Stephen writes, good Stevening. Brackets, my name is Stephen, and although this is my standard chat-up line, it barely works in real life as it is predicated on knowing my name beforehand. I think that's fair.
And only meeting people at night.
Honestly, I thought he meant, I want to give you a good Stevening. And I thought, that's a bit too forward, I think.
It's
for me.
Very yes, forward.
But at least applicable to daytime as well as night.
I think we can all agree it's not one for the ages, chat-up-wise. Don't stop using it, Stephen. Anyway, he says, I've just learned an interesting fact and thought I'd share it with you guys as it can be reworded in that famous, slightly irritating QI and fish way. Oh. All right. And then he says, the A303 was not built close to Stonehenge. Stonehenge was built close to the A303.
Now, okay, I'm happy to put up with the abuse and the slightly dodgy chat-up lines, because that is a great fact.
That is fantastic. Yeah.
He says, it turns out the A303 follows an ancient trade route and has been in use for thousands of years. I recall a few years ago, Andy buffoonishly repeated a fake fact about the motorway in Cornwall following the migration routes of Ice Age mammoths or something, so I thought I'd double check. I have checked it as well, Stephen, and I think it's about 50-50. Because there is this ancient route. It was used several thousand years ago. Stonehenge was built about 5,000 years ago. And it's quite hard to tell when a trade route was first used. Mm. Because initially you'd just be following like a chalk path at the top of a ridge or something.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I mean, who knows? They could have been built around the same time. Like, which was built first, the M6 or T-Bay services?
Like, I think, naturally, if you build the trade route, you want something to look at along the way. Basically, Stonehenge might be that kind of service station.
Yes.
Or like one of those giant prawn statues they have in Australia for something to look at.
Yes. Or like, you know, those big billboards that ask you a quiz question.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If we look 5 miles down the road, there might be a sign, like an ancient sign saying, how many stones do you think there are in Stonehenge?
Well, we've covered Stonehenge and the theories of what it might be multiple times on this show. Like one great one was that it was a giant glockenspiel. The other one is that it had nothing to do with ritualistic stuff, but it was built as a sort of a team exercise on a business outing.
You know what, Dan? I reckon that our theory that it's a giant motorway service station is as applicable as any of those other theories that you've just said.
Absolutely. Yeah. Probably as much science behind it as well. But that's great. I'm kind of in love with Steven's email and tone. And
absolutely.
I don't think we've done justice to his pickup line. I think he could probably sell it.
No, we've all been given a good Stevening, haven't we?
Okay, here is another fact. This one is from Keziah Farthing. And Keziah tells us about Swindon Wildcats. So Swindon Wildcats are a hockey team, an ice hockey team. And this year, not one, but two father and son duos played on the same roster.
Two father and son duos?
Absolutely. So it's completely unique. It's never happened before. There's an example of one father-son. Gordie Howe and his sons played in 1979. But like for this to happen twice in the same team has never really heard before.
Now, James, you know a lot about sports. Is it the case that a sporting team which has a father and son duo on it, is it the case that the sport in question is not enormously oversubscribed with people wanting to play it? Because normally sports have a very specific age range of players that they're going for.
I see
and,
what
like,
you mean.
You need to be 19.
But there are some like football players who play, like Cristiano Ronaldo's still playing football and he might be like 41 or something now. Like he's around 40 for sure. And absolutely, footballers tend to be a little bit promiscuous when they're younger men. So it's not impossible that he could have a child who was playing football at this age.
Yeah.
Are you suggesting there's a footballer out there who could have his own squad?
Yes.
Like, well, or at least a five-a-side team?
There is a footballer whose progeny are on the same team.
Okay.
And that is Hazana Parnell and her daughter, Ramaya Osborne, who played in the same team in this year's FA Cup. They played for Hensford in the FA Cup second round qualifying match against Bromsgrove Sporting. And not only were this mother and daughter on the same team, but the mother provided an assist for the daughters to score. So kind of the mother crossed it in and the daughter scored it. And the daughter, Amaya, said, "We're both so connected. I see her visions and she can see mine."
Wow. Oh, wow.
Which feels like cheating to me, actually.
Yeah, that is cheating. You're not allowed to use telepathy on the pitch, from my limited knowledge of the game.
But there you go. So that is not an undersubscribed sport, football.
No, exactly. Absolutely. You know, we recently had Melanie Bracewell on the podcast.
Yeah.
If you go to her Wikipedia page, it's just absolutely riddled with New Zealand cricketers. Yeah. Her whole family.
What?
Her relatives. Okay, notable relatives are including two uncles who both played test match cricket for New Zealand, or at least one of them did and played like 40 matches. Two of her cousins are current cricketers in New Zealand. That wow. should have been her world. And she does play netball and volleyball and things like that. But
imagine the disappointment in the family when they found out that she was going to be like coming on QI and stuff instead of playing in the World Cup. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes. Hey, why don't I move us on to another fact? We've got a fantastic one here from Tanya Thamkurufat. It's a surname that I've definitely butchered, Tanya. Canadians have special crisps to eat during storms. This is what? So good. Yeah. Okay. So she sent the fact which says, "I learned that in Canada, there's a tradition of eating storm crisps. And it's such a popular tradition that there are chips made specifically to eat while hunkering down at home during these storms." So I looked into it. This is true. This originates back in 2014 when there was a radio broadcaster called Stephanie Domit who was on the radio talking about an incoming storm. And she said she had an intention to purchase certain chips and dips to prepare for the storm. And they started talking about this as storm chips, and this has become an actual thing.
I don't think that's a proper tradition. I'm sorry to cut across you, Dan. I just
really?
Think...
No, it's a growing. It's a growing thing.
Are they especially strong crisps?
The tradition is that you would buy crisps, but there is now a company that has trademarked storm chips and produces storm chip bags that you can buy in the shop. So it's very specifically for it. Now, I asked a Canadian friend of mine whether or not he had done it or heard of it. He said no, but he looked into it and he concedes it's very predominant in a different bit of Canada.
Okay, guys, what's everyone's storm crisp? This is like my version of Desert Island Discs.
You're
going to be trapped in a never-ending storm in your home and it's never, ever going to end and you can only have one kind of crisp.
Okay, shall I tell you mine?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Hula Hoops.
Original, salted, barbecue?
Oh, the flavour doesn't really matter.
Okay.
And that's because if you have like a tube, it has a very special sort of aerodynamic signature, which will, you know, like one of the best paper aeroplanes you can make is like just a circle of paper. And when the air rushes through it, it keeps it up in the air. And so I think that I could like make these hula hoops sort of hover in front of my mouth and then eat them like a Pac-Man.
Right.
That's impeccable reasoning. That's incredible. It's such good reasoning that I cannot think you have not thought about this before.
I
like all of the aerodynamic properties.
Can I just say,
storm outside your house?
Andy, we've been doing this show for like over 10 years.
Yeah.
All this says is that you have no trust in my sense of whimsy, that you think I can't just make this up on the spot.
Did you like cheat and look at the notes for this before, James? I just feel like there's no way that whimsy is coming up on the spur of the moment. I feel like, who's under your desk? Is there a writer under your desk handing you up bits of whimsy? Have you got Michael McIntyre down there?
I just like Sensations Thai sweet chili. I just want to eat it. I'm not trying to make it float.
I would use those pickled onion Monster Munch and gear together the teeth or the claws on each one and build a rudimentary clock. That's what I'd do.
Yes.
Very good, Andy, yeah.
Thank you.
You saw the padding he did, James, earlier, trying to work out how you were writing. He was writing that in his head while he was doing all that.
Yeah, I've got Jasper Carrot here, and he's been racking his brains.
Here is a fact from Siddhartha Basu, who gives us a little bit more grist for Andy's book of things that sound like they're named after the thing they are, but actually are named after a person or the other way around.
Very yes. Nice.
We're still working on the title, but this this is a bit of news from the last few weeks, because Marco Rubio, the American politician, tweeted today, another transformer explosion at the German dam in Bolivar State caused another massive blackout. And he was complaining about what he thought was a problem in Venezuela due to the government, to which he got a reply saying, Senator Marco Rubio, an important transformer exploded in Bolivar. If that you're correct. However, it was not in a dam and it was not German. My name is German Dam. I am one of the journalists who published the information.
Wow.
What he had done was seen the name German, I suppose you pronounce it, German Dam, and thought that it was an actual dam, but actually it was just the name of this reporter.
Beautiful.
So it doesn't quite fit in your book, but maybe as part of the intro or an appendix.
I think we can have a chapter for that, like unusual cases. I don't know if you guys, I don't think I've told you this. I've actually made a document on my desktop now.
Have you?
Yeah. And it's now, thanks to your contribution there, James, got 6 entries in it.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Have we heard all 5 other ones on the show over the years?
Yeah, you have. French's mustard, German chocolate cake. Oh, German chocolate cake and German dam. They can go together. Yes. The children's python, the Outer Bridge, which is named after someone called Outer Bridge, and Valentine's meat juice.
You know how you have pitched about 200,000 different sitcoms on this show, and
yeah,
none of them has yet to be made?
Yeah.
Do you have a document open for each one of those? And
know?
If so, what is your memory storage plan?
I've not written them down because I assume, maybe this is naive, but I assume that someone's going to get in touch. I know that we get big shots listening to us. I can tell that from the state of the inbox. And I just assume that one day a Spielberg or maybe a Nolan will get in touch. Maybe Christopher Nolan, having done The Odyssey, will say, actually, I think we should do Clown Priest, the series, and make that the next big thing.
I reckon what happened is Edgar Wright was writing that email to you and he heard the episode when you said he wasn't cool. And he just went, nah, I'm gonna get McIntyre instead.
You're absolutely right. What was the one? Because he would be perfect for that one. What was it? It was something cop. Do you remember that?
They're all something cop.
They're all cop. Tiberius cop was one.
That's it. Tiberius
there was
cop.
The Tetris cop or something like that.
Yes, there is. Dibley. I just know that these are good ideas. That's the terrible thing. I don't know why they're not being made.
I think maybe it's because we're not in the era of the cop drama right now. Like, many of your ideas are like Balloon Cop or Candle Cop or whatever, right? But there's not many of those shows being made right now.
It's like, more like Line of Duty is procedural.
Yeah.
And this is very much more, what if there was a cop who was also the Emperor Tiberius and there's no procedure there?
Yeah.
You're right.
I think that's what people like. People like a crime and it's solved, but we see all the workings going on in the background. It's not so much about the cop having a wacky personality trait these days.
I want to see a series about a struggling author who's been trying to sell multiple cop TV shows.
Whoa, struggling is loaded language, Dan.
Loaded like the gun of Struggle Cop. This is from Stav Berman, who writes, and this, give it a chance, let it breathe. On October 21st, 1988, a falling poodle caused the death of 3 people in Buenos Aires. The poodle, who ironically was called Catchy, fell 13 stories, landing on and instantly killing a 75-year-old.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
In the ensuing commotion, a 46-year-old onlooker got hit by a bus that they didn't see coming, And then an unidentified man who witnessed all of this suffered a heart attack from the stress and died on the way to hospital. So it was a poodle led to three very different deaths in one go.
This is like Final Destination or something.
It really feels like it. And I tried to look it up. I tried to debunk it. You know, I looked into Snopes and because this does it does smell of it, right? And nowhere, as far as I can see, has debunked it, but it has appeared in multiple places, Reuters and the Canberra Times newspaper, that big newspaper. I'm sure it's massive in Canberra.
But do we know why it was falling?
They don't know
anything more.
No. They say we have absolutely no idea. It fell off a 13th floor balcony, so maybe it was something to do with superstition and bad luck that can often make you fall off a building on the 13th floor. That's why buildings often don't have a 13th floor, to avoid this kind of situation.
I mean, that's sad quite times. Sad. Yeah. Can I give you a more whimsical animal one? This one came from Stephen Corcoran, and it's just a sentence that in 2024, a Portuguese plane was grounded for 4 days after 130 hamsters escaped on board. As far as I could see, there were no deaths involved in this one. Basically, they were in the cargo hold and they managed to escape and they ran riot. And it took them days to get them all out because they had to find 132 hamsters inside this aeroplane. And aeroplane holds are pretty big. And eventually, they managed to get them on the fourth day.
It's bloody hard to get a hamster out from a tight place.
Okay.
Okay. All right, Richard Gere.
What on earth?
Where have you? Which tight place have you experienced a hamster in?
I just mean they like narrow dark. There's nothing I can say now. There's nothing I can say that makes it sound like I haven't been indulging in unnatural practices. I simply mean they like narrow, constricted spaces. They crawl into tunnels and holes. And I used to have hamsters when I was little, and they would get, if they got loose around the house and they got under the dishwasher or behind a bookcase or something.
Or up your ass. Job
to... Yeah, all right. Okay. It was just very hard to get them out. You had to lure them out. And of course, they were labeled, weren't they, James? They were labeled 1 to 70 and then 72 to 133. So everybody thought there was one hamster left.
That would be genius.
Cool. We should wrap up here on this side. That is it for your facts.
Sorry, one second, guys. The cat is banging on the door. It might need a shit.
Right. Okay.
Sorry,
I could hear it banging.
Just trying to get in the room because I closed the door. So I thought there was a chance it could be a proper emergency, but she just went for her food and now she's looking at me like I'm a dick.
The cat is banging on the door is quite a good way of saying that you need a poo.
Yes.
The flap cannot hold the cat for long.
Okay, Dad.
Can you... Yeah, I'm just... There's a gardener outside chopping, and can you guys hear it?
Do you need a poo something? As well? No.
The gardener is chopping.
The log is about to tumble to the ground.
Oh, dear.
All right, here we go.
I'm so sorry, guys. There's a huge chocolate bar that's being forced into the room. I've just got to go. And... Excuse me.
All right, here we go. Okay, that is all of your facts for this episode. However, before we wrap up, we need to hand out some facts. That's right. If you are a member of Club Fish, the highest tier, which is friend of the podcast, you will become owner of one of the facts from our archive. That's 12 years of headline facts, and you will be the custodian of one of them. As well as that, you're going to be sent a digital certificate. So check it out. But for now, let's hand some out. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first. This fact now belongs to Elliot. And Elliot, your fact this week is that male turkeys blush when they see female turkeys.
Aww.
Christmassy one.
Yep.
Romantic, so Valentine's Day-y as well. Yes. Thanksgiving-y because of turkeys as well.
It's quite an all-rounder, this fact, isn't it?
But I think what it is like turkeys, they have the wattle, which is like the reddish bit of skin that's below their chin. And they also have a red sort of, what's it called? The comb.
Oh, yeah.
But these things, they get darker in color when the blood rushes to them. And for turkeys, that happens when a male sees a female.
Lovely. Very cool.
I've got one that goes out to Andrew, and it's that the composer of Jingle Bells also wrote the song We Conquer or Die. And I think this was a guy called James Lord Pierpont, and I believe fought in the US Civil War for the South, and wrote various punchy battle hymns. And that was his sort of light relief, I suppose, was Jingle Bells.
Unless there's like an underlying meaning behind Jingle Bells that we don't know about.
Jingle Bells, true. Jingle Bells, the South has been betrayed. That kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. the original lyrics.
I go on here for Tim Oxenford. And this is the fact that Franz Kafka once convinced his whole family that Einstein's theory of relativity would cure his tuberculosis.
Wow.
Yeah. Right.
I love Kafka. He's one of my favorite authors. And he he just worked in like a bureaucratic office, didn't he? Which he really hated. Yeah. And then he would just go home and write these incredible stories.
And then didn't really become famous from them, I think, in life.
I don't think
he didn't publish a huge amount.
When he asked for his papers to be burned after his death, but the person who was given that task went, "No, I'm gonna publish them." So we actually found out a lot about his writings against his wishes.
I especially loved reading them when I was working in offices. Like, I reckon for anyone who works in like an office job, reading Kafka is just, it really sort of makes you think, well, maybe this is not so bad.
That's very high end, James. I gotta say, other people would recommend watching The Office, maybe the American version of The Office if you want a bit of cultural diversity, but for you, straight in, no, read Kafka. That's great.
I actually think Ricky Gervais is like a modern day Franz Kafka.
Interesting.
As yet unafflicted with tuberculosis. And we pray that continues.
Okay, here's another fact. This one now belongs to Sean Belton. Sean, your fact is that dead geckos still stick to walls for at least half an hour.
That's a nice fact. And you can print out the certificate we send you, Sean, and you can stick this to your wall.
With a gecko.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I remember this fact. It was so exciting at the time. It was a really exciting new scientific finding.
Here's another one. This goes out to Cara Chrysostomo. And the fact is, in 2013, a group of people tried to crowdfund London's first UFO museum. Their target was $1 million. They only managed to raise, however, $370.
That's not good.
It's a big gap in the fundraising, yeah.
When did we do this fact? Would this have been probably 2015, maybe?
Or?
I think it was just about then, yeah.
But we wouldn't have known then what we know now, which is that aliens do exist and Trump is about to release all of the information.
Got to do anything to distract from the Epstein files, won't he? Sorry.
Imagine if he releases all of the UFO data and it turns out that the aliens have just been sending each other emails about Epstein's Island.
I don't remember too much about this other than it was a big attempt and they just had to pull out of it. I don't think London has a UFO museum since this happened.
No, I think we would know about it if there was one.
No, there was a big thing where Blackpool was almost turned into a Eric von Daniken Chariots of the Gods theme park, basically.
The whole of Blackpool, then?
Such a huge section of Blackpool's workforce were going to be working for this theme park. And it got pulled at the end because they thought, this is nuts. What are we doing?
Not at the end, right near the beginning, I bet it got pulled. It wasn't like they'd nearly turned all of Blackpool into an Eric von Daniken Chariots of the Gods theme park.
To be fair, Andy, if you pull something and stop doing it, then that is the end, right?
That's true. It's like whenever you have lost an object, you always find it in the last place you look because then you stop looking. Yep, yep.
When was it then that they did this?
It was only a few years ago.
Okay. Because I used to go to Blackpool as a kid all the time and I would have dreamed of seeing that kind of theme park there.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, as a kid, it's a perfect... What's that, Andy?
This is 2021. Chariots of the Gods ditched at Blackpool Central. The developers behind the £300 million visitor attraction have decided not to name the showcase indoor theme park after the 1968 pseudoscience book. Oh, sorry, Dan, that's devastating for you.
I know it's pseudoscience.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, listener, he just winked when he said that. So it sounds like they did make it, but they just didn't name it after him.
Yes, and listen to this. The contents of the venue and its attractions, which include a flying theatre, will still be based on von Daniken's book.
So is there an apology coming my way from you, Andy? Or are we just going to ignore the takedown you gave me before verifying I was right?
I think we'll just press on.
This fact is now in the custodianship of Finn. Finn, your fact is that cows have friends and they get sad if you separate them.
Oh,
Alex Bell, fact from when he was on the show.
Do you remember on tour we got to meet the scientist who discovered that cows with names give more milk than cows without names?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That was a very exciting moment. It feels like this is in the same territory as study.
Yeah, I think it was.
Here's one more, and this goes out to Web Jedi. What a great name. Mm. And the fact is, it's illegal to take a selfie with a tiger in New York City.
Wow.
I'm a bit surprised about that.
Yeah. But we must have found the actual ordinance, because online you do get a lot of these things where it's like, it's illegal to do this in this town or whatever, and often they're made up.
Personal tiger ownership is quite big in the States, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think Mike Tyson had one. New York City does feel like an odd place, particularly Manhattan, to have a tiger.
But obviously, between this show going out and this moment, we've had the whole Tiger King and...
Yes.
Interesting. Don't take selfies with tigers. I assume it's still against the rules. So if you're listening in New York City, don't do it, guys.
Put that tiger down. Here's one that goes out to Christopher. Christopher, your fact is that the active ingredient in the first ever homeopathy treatment was the blood of Thomas Becket. For international listeners, Thomas Becket was Archbishop of Canterbury.
And
I suppose, do we need to explain what an archbishop? No, we don't. Okay.
Who will free me of this meddlesome priest?
Oh, and he was killed by some knights at the wishing of the king, and then the king had to do a load of penance.
But was it of the wishing of the king, or did he just say, oh, I hope someone gets rid of this archbishop, and then the knights went, did he just say we need to kill Thomas Becket?
It's one of those classic miscommunications in an office environment. If you work in an office, I'd recommend you read the story of Thomas Becket.
And the idea is he was venerated at the time, and all the Catholics in the country thought that he would become a saint, which indeed he did. And what they did was they took his blood, and so that everyone could get a little bit of it, they put a tiny bit in some water and then gave everyone some of the water. And we supposed that that's very similar to how homeopathy works.
I guess the big question is, I guess the big question is, what works better for tuberculosis, Einstein's theory of relativity or the blood of Thomas Becket?
Mm.
I think equal.
Mythbusters did that, didn't they?
They did. Sorry, that's actually a classic app. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, guys. All right, well, listen, we're going to have to wrap up, but congratulations to Web Jedi, to Finn, Kara, Christopher, Sean, Tim, Andrew, and Elliot. You are now the custodians of all of these great facts. You will be getting a digital certificate that you can put up on your wall with a dead gecko holding it up. And if you want to become part of this as well, I suggest you go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish, because that is where you'll find the gateway to Clubfish. There's lots of different tiers, but at the highest one, friend of the podcast, that is where you can be given your own fact. But do check out the other tiers, because there's so many great things that we're doing on there at the moment, from drop us a line through to other bonus episodes. There's quizzes. It's a great place to be. So sign up now. But that's it for today's episode. So we're going to see you again on Friday with a main fish episode, and we'll be back next Monday with another little fish. We'll see you then. Goodbye.